Ever heard of a company union? It's well, imagine a union that's supposed to represent workers, but it's actually controlled by the company itself.
Oh, that sounds a little shady.
Yeah, kind of fishy, right? And get this, back in the 1930s, that's exactly what was going down at the Budd Manufacturing Company.
But manufacturing, weren't they a big player in the auto industry back then?
You got it. Huge. And today, we're diving deep into this landmark legal case that finally put a stop to their shenanigans.
A case that's still cited today to protect workers' rights.
Exactly. We're talking about Edward G. Budd Manufacturing Company versus the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB for short.
Oh, yeah, that one went all the way to the Supreme Court, didn't
All the way to the top.
it?
But to really get the full picture, we need to rewind back to 1933. Budd Manufacturing, big factory in Philadelphia, no unions at all.
No unions at all. Was that even common back then?
Well, not unheard of,
Yeah.
especially before the National Industrial Recovery Act, the NIRA, came along.
Right, the NIRA. That was designed to improve labor conditions for workers, wasn't it?
That was the whole idea. But here's where things take a turn. The NIRA actually encouraged companies to form these employee representation groups.
Sounds well-intentioned, but I bet there were some unintended consequences there.
You're catching on. Those representation groups, they became what we now call company unions,
Yeah.
basically wolves in sheep's clothing.
Pretending to represent the workers, but actually doing the company's bidding.
Bingo. And that's exactly what Budd did. They set up the Employee Representation Association, the ERA, supposed to be this independent voice for the workers.
I'm already skeptical. What tipped you off that the ERA wasn't all it was cracked up to be?
Well, first of all, Budd was bankrolling the whole thing.
Yeah.
Elections, meeting spaces, you name it, Budd paid for it.
So much for independent. What
Oh, and
else?
get this, there were no membership dues for the ERA.
No dues. Free membership. That sounds a little too good to be true.
There's always a catch, right? Here's the kicker. To participate in the ERA, you had to be part of this company-sponsored program, the Employees Exchange.
The Employees Exchange. What was that all about?
Basically, it was like the social hub for Budd employees. Social events, benefits, even a place to cash their paychecks.
I see where this is going. So Bud was essentially dangling these perks in front of workers, saying, hey, if you want in on the good stuff, you got to join our little ERA.
Exactly. It was all about control. And you know what the court called this cozy little arrangement?
Let me guess, a conflict of interest.
Close. They called it a line of cleavage problem. There wasn't enough separation between the company and the ERA to make it truly independent.
Makes sense. So how did this company union charade finally come to light? Did someone blow the whistle?
Well, in 1934, the National Recovery Administration, the NRA, they stepped in. They saw what was happening and demanded changes.
So Bud had to make some concessions.
They did. Budd was forced to introduce some reforms, like secret ballots and ERA elections. But even with these tweaks, the ERA was still under Budd's thumb.
A wolf in sheep's clothing, even with a slightly fancier costume.
Exactly. And then, in 1941, a real labor union, the CIO, they tried to challenge the ERA's grip on the workforce.
The CIO, they were a major player in the labor movement, weren't they? This must have been a pretty big showdown.
Huge. The CIO was trying to become the official bargaining representative for Budd's employees, but the ERA, with Budd's backing, blocked them at every turn.
I can see how this is setting the stage for the legal battle to come.
Right. This is where it gets real, because now we have these unfair labor practice charges coming into play, and it all revolves around two Budd employees, Walter Wiegand and Milton Davis.
What happened to them?
Well, Wiegand, a vocal CIO supporter, he gets fired. And Davis, he's denied reinstatement after a work dispute. The NLRB claimed these were acts of discrimination, plain and simple.
So Bud was trying to silence anyone who dared to support a real union.
That's what the NLRB was arguing. They said Budd violated the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA, which, of course, protects workers' right to organize.
This is shaping up to be a real legal thriller.
It is. You've got the NLRB accusing Budd of breaking the law and Budd claiming they were just running their business. But at the heart of it all are two big questions. Did Budd illegally dominate the ERA? And were those employees targeted because of their union activities?
And that's where we'll have to leave it for now. I'm already hooked.
We'll be back with part two, our deep dive into Edward G. Budd Manufacturing Company versus the National Labor Relations Board, right after this. All right, we're back, and things are about to heat up in this Budd manufacturing case. Last we left off, the court was trying to figure out if Bud was pulling the strings in their so-called independent ERA and if they were retaliating against those two employees, Wiegand and Davis, just for supporting a real union.
Yeah, the stakes were pretty high for both sides. So let's get right to it. Did the court buy Bud's argument that their ERA was truly independent? What about that whole line of cleavage thing?
Well, the court didn't mince words. They sided with the NLRB, finding that Bud's influence over the ERA was just undeniable.
Undeniable? How so? What was their reasoning?
The court pointed to all those financial ties, you know, the funding, the resources, even the preferential treatment that ERA reps got. It was pretty clear that the ERA wouldn't have lasted a day without Bud propping it up.
So basically, the ERA was like a puppet, and Bud was holding all the strings.
Exactly. The court saw right through that charade. And their decision sent a big message to companies everywhere. You can't create a fake union and expect to get away with it.
Right. That line of cleavage has to be real, not just some illusion. This case really set a precedent for how we view company unions, didn't it?
Absolutely. It solidified the idea that even subtle forms of company control can violate the NLRA. It's not just about outright manipulation. It's about making sure workers have a real voice, you know, a voice that's not just echoing the company line.
A genuine, independent voice. Okay, so the court settled that issue. But what about those two employees, Wiegand and Davis? Did the court agree that Bud was trying to silence them by getting rid of them?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. Remember, Bud claimed they had perfectly good reasons for firing Wiegand and denying Davis his job back. Wiegand had that disciplinary record, and they said Davis's case was just a matter of standard company policy.
But the court wasn't convinced.
Not at all. They dug deep, looked at the timing, compared Wiegand's treatment to other employees with similar records, and took into account Bud's overall attempts to stifle union activity.
Sounds like a thorough investigation. And what did they conclude?
They found a clear pattern of discrimination. They weren't buying Bud's excuses.
So the takeaway here is that even if an employee has a few strikes against them, the company can't just use that as a cover to get rid of them if their real motive is to squelch union activity.
Right. Companies can't just target those who speak out, even if they're not the perfect employee.
It's a reminder that the law is there to protect everyone, even those who might be seen as more vulnerable.
Okay, so Bud lost on both counts. But the story doesn't end there, does it? They complied with the order to disestablish the ERA, but then they sent out that letter to their employees, and that letter almost landed them in hot water again, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, that letter was a real turning point in the case. On the surface, it seemed pretty harmless. Bud praised the ERA's work, talked about wanting peace in the workplace, that sort of thing.
But between the lines, there's a different message, wasn't there?
Definitely. It was like Bud was trying to subtly nudge their employees toward forming another company-friendly union, one that wouldn't rock the boat too much.
So sneaky. The NLRB saw right through it, right?
They did. They argued that the letter was a clear attempt to skirt the court's order and keep controlling worker representation.
So now the court had a new problem. Was Bud's letter just free speech? Or was it illegal coercion? Talk about a cuff call. Where do you draw the line?
That's the million-dollar question. Bud said, hey, we have a right to express our views. It's free speech. But the NLRB countered that, given Bud's past actions, the letter was clearly intended to pressure and influence employees.
So the court had to weigh those competing interests, worker protection versus free speech. How do they even begin to untangle that mess?
They went through that letter with a fine-tooth comb, looking for anything that could be construed as a direct threat or pressure tactic. They knew they couldn't completely silence Bud.
Right. They still had a right to communicate with their employees. So did Bud get away with it? Was their letter considered free speech?
It was a close one. But in the end, the court said the letter was ambiguous enough that it didn't cross the line into illegal coercion. They figured employees were savvy enough to see through Bud's hints.
So Bud dodged a legal bullet, but I bet this whole ordeal left a mark on their reputation.
No doubt about it. They might have won in court, but they definitely didn't win any popularity contests. This case painted a pretty clear picture of a company that was willing to push the boundaries to maintain control over its workforce.
And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into this Bud manufacturing case. It's been a wild ride so far.
It really has. And, you know, it's amazing how much this one case from way back when still shapes how we think about worker rights today.
You're right. It's not just a history lesson. It's a reminder of how important it is for workers to have a genuine voice in the workplace.
Absolutely. And Bud really tried everything they could to control that narrative, didn't they?
Yeah, first with that whole company union setup, and then with that sneaky letter they send out. They may have dodged a contempt charge, but it definitely left a stain on their reputation.
No doubt. It showed they were willing to play fast and loose with the rules.
It all boils down to that line of cleavage, that separation between companies and the groups that represent their workers. How did this case change how we understand that line?
It became a cornerstone of labor law. The court made it crystal clear that companies can't be funding, controlling, or influencing unions, even in subtle ways. It's about ensuring workers have a truly independent voice at the bargaining table.
Not just a voice that's echoing what the company wants them to say.
Exactly. And remember, Walter Wigan, the employee who was fired, Bud tried to say it was for disciplinary reasons, but the court wasn't fooled.
They saw right through it, didn't they?
They did. And that's a crucial point. We can't always take what companies say at face value. We have to look at the bigger picture, consider the timing, the past practices, and ask ourselves, is there something else going on here? Is there a pattern of behavior that suggests the company is trying to discourage union activity?
Like connecting the dots to uncover the real story. And in Wigan's case, they realized his union involvement was the real reason he was let go.
And that sends a strong message. Even if an employee isn't perfect, the company can't just use that as an excuse to get rid of them if their real motive is to silence them or prevent them from organizing.
So the law has to protect everyone, even those who might not be model employees, as long as they're exercising their right to organize.
Precisely. It's about leveling the playing field a bit and making sure everyone has a fair shot. This case happened a long time ago, but it's still incredibly relevant today.
It is. So what are some of the key takeaways our listeners should keep in mind, especially as we navigate this ever-changing world of work?
Well, I think the biggest one is this. The fight for worker rights is never truly over. We have to stay vigilant, keep an eye out for those subtle ways companies try to exert control, and always be ready to push back against any practices that threaten worker rights.
Because let's face it, there are always going to be those who try to exploit workers or tip the scales in their favor.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that labor law is constantly evolving. What flew back then might not fly now, so we have to stay informed about the latest developments and be ready to challenge anything that seems unfair.
It's like that saying, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. But in this case, it's the price of fair labor practices and worker protections.
Well said. And, you know, this Bud case is a great example of how the courts can play a crucial role in protecting those rights. They have to be willing to look beyond the surface and ensure that workers truly have a voice.
So it's not just about individual cases. It's about creating a system where everyone benefits from strong unions and strong worker protections. It leads to a more just and equitable society, a stronger economy, and a workforce that feels valued and respected.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And cases like this remind us that those rights weren't just handed to us, they were fought for, often at great personal cost. We have a responsibility to honor that legacy.
By continuing to advocate for fair labor practices and by making sure the voices of workers are always heard loud and clear.
Well said.
Well, that's about it for our deep dive into the Edward G. Budd Manufacturing Company case. We've covered a lot of ground, from company unions to worker rights, to the lasting impact of this landmark decision. We hope you found it informative, and more importantly, we hope it's inspired you to keep thinking critically about these issues, to keep asking questions, and to keep pushing for a more just and equitable world for all workers. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.